To live in a sacred space is to live in a symbolic environment where spiritual life is possible, where everything around you speaks of exaltation of the spirit. This from Joseph Campbell, a quote from Sacred Home, a book by today's guest, Laureen Morrison Meyer. Welcome to Alternative Currents. I'm Bella Johnson, and joining me today as my special co-host, Dee Groom. Home decorating is more than window treatments and color schemes. Bringing soul into a personal space is important. Blending time-honored design principles with Western mythology and folklore, interior designer Laureen Morrison Meyer shows readers how to transform their home into a sanctuary for body, mind, and spirit. Sacred Home presents an overview of Western religious and folk traditions regarding home protection, purification, and sanctity. Learn about protective household deities, sacred symbols, and the origination of common household myths. This guidebook also explains the four archetypal design styles and how to combine them with the reader's unique style to create a space that nourishes the soul. Laureen Morrison Meyer has been an interior designer for the past 25 years, focusing on creating homes imbued with a soulful quality, supporting the physical and spiritual needs of the occupants. I'd like to welcome you to the show today, Laureen.
Thank you.
Can you first explain what you mean by a sacred home and why you feel it's important to utilize meaningful, personally relevant symbolism in creating this sacred space?
Certainly. Sacred home really refers to all of our homes, but we may not really acknowledge that fact. But our homes are sacred space and have been since ancient history. And we are surrounded by symbols that speak of the wonderful sacred imagery that surrounds us. And we need to be cognizant of what some of those symbols are and what they mean and how we can use those to actually enhance our living space.
Right. How does this system that you utilize or that you've kind of come to on your own, how does that compare or contrast with something like feng shui?
I wanted to look at a Western version of feng shui, if there was such a thing, that had come up through Western Europe. And the way we study interior design is through Greek and Roman and then through the Western European tradition. So my curiosity was there anything that was similar in our own heritage through the Western culture? And what I found was that there was very ancient myths and stories that had to do with the sanctity of the home and various things that were done to create this wonderful sacred space. It took a little bit of ferreting out, but it was very interesting research.
Right. I'm really glad that you've done this in a way because I'm a big fan of feng shui, and we've done a program or two on feng shui in the past on this program. But it's really different to be able to say, well, let's take our own traditions and take a look at those. So I was actually quite delighted to see that a book was available on that. Can you talk a little bit again about those, how some of those traditions come through in a decorating way for you?
Certainly. You know, each culture and certainly the individuals within the culture itself have preferences for various colors. We find that in, especially in Eastern tradition, the colors that might be considered sacred might have totally different meanings for us personally or even as a culture. So I think it's really important that we adopt things that speak to us on our intuitive level versus kind of borrowing things from other cultures. Feng Shui has wonderful basis from the spiritual standpoint, but I think some of the cures or some of the symbols that are used might be a little bit foreign to some of us and might feel a little awkward in our homes. And so that's one of the things that I was interested in looking into.
Right. And how did that play out for you, or how does it play out for you in your own personal practice? I mean, how, you know, what are some of those symbols for you? How does that, feel free to talk about that if you want
okay.
to.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Some of the basic symbols that I found that went back into ancient history was that the home was really considered to be the womb of the first mother, and that nurturing and nourishing space that we go into each day can be looked upon as this wonderful protective space. And a lot of the symbols have to do with the abundant nature of the universe that were first associated with the home. For instance, a symbol such as a circle. The most profound symbol was the procreative ability of the female form to produce herself, to reproduce life from her own body. And so this circle represented the very first representations were the pregnant belly of the female. And that has become a wonderful symbol that we find certainly all throughout motifs in our homes and can be used to exemplify abundance and rebirth and creativity.
Yeah, even the triangle, of course, that would make sense if we looked at it, but there's so many design forms and symbols that you've mentioned that really patriarchy kind of stole, I guess,
exactly
from the feminine. So it's interesting to see you put those in a more traditional context or a more matriarchal context.
Well, and that took really some uncovering because, of course, after they had been taken for many years, as you say, in the patriarchal form, they had been turned around and also made to appear, a lot of forms and symbols became diabolical or really kind of, what's another
well,
word
I,
for
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it probably is a good word. I mean, things that were sacred became evil, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And whereas something like the triangle that might have represented the pubic area of a woman became known as the Trinity, and maybe, you know, that's certainly a powerful symbol, but it has more ancient aspects to it that we can use in our homes to really exemplify things that are of a creative nature or an abundant nature.
And too, if we remember the triple goddess, right?
Exactly.
The three faces of the feminine, the maiden, mother, and crone as well.
As right.
Father, Son, and Holy Spirit can be helpful.
And I thought it was interesting to note that above our doorway, in many, many of our homes, we have what's called a pediment in Western architecture, and that's a triangular shape just under the gable.
Right.
So whether architects knew it or not, they were incorporating sacred symbols in our homes.
Yeah. You mentioned, too, the serpent and where that, how that's kind of gone the way of evil, but how, you know, how that was an ancient feminine symbol and so on, yeah.
It's very ancient. The archaeologist Marija Gambutis pointed out that some of the very earliest artifacts had this wavy line that later became at that time was known as the waters of life, and then it was associated with a serpent. All of these, and it also, I haven't found this anywhere, but I have a suspicion that it's also associated with the umbilical cord. Because everything that had to do with the birth or the reproduction of the human species was sacred. And so here's this cord that connected this fetus, the baby, with life, with everything that gave it life. So this wavy line was sacred. There was nothing evil or diabolical about it. And we know that the snake sheds its skin and what appears to have rebirth or renewal. It became known as a symbol of something that was very sacred. So that's a good example of a symbol that was turned absolutely around and became evil. And I think many people have a fear of snakes that is very unwarranted and unfounded and probably should be something that we take a good look at.
Mm. So how do we take these symbols and work them into our own sacred space? Each according to their own. I would imagine you encourage people to make it their personal space
exactly.
More than something that appeals to you or some kind of a rigid paradigm.
Well, I think that's one of the most important things is that your home needs to represent who you are versus some prescribed dogma that an interior designer or design manuals tell you your home should look like. And the symbols that you use in your home can change. You can have symbols that are reminding you of things that you currently would like to bring into your life, would like to call into your own reality. For instance, if you're out of work looking for a job, you know, you can use symbols of abundance and symbols that will remind you that the universe has everything that you need and there's no lack. So you can have a special place in your home that you'd like to use your for your symbolic artifacts. Or if they're more long-term symbols that you would like to incorporate, you can actually use them in your decor. We get back to the symbol of the snake. You could paint wavy lines around the soffit in your bathroom, for instance. And that would give you a feeling of renewal and rejuvenation and rebirth, which is very appropriate in a bathroom space where you're revitalizing and cleansing. Lots of ways to do this, and fun ways.
I'm wondering how you would advise people, especially who might be city dwellers as opposed to living in either the suburbs or in the country, on how to make a space that isn't technically their space, that's apartment dwelling, a space of their own.
That's a good question. I think throughout my design career, I often worked with people who had two different ideas of how their space should look. And when you're living in an apartment, you have another aspect in that, how much can I really do to this space, you know, that my landlord will allow. There's a lot of things that can be done that are temporary, that are movable. For instance, small shrines that you can keep your sacred objects in can fit well, work well in, for apartments. I love a little box that has wonderful found objects or objects that I have purchased that have special meaning for me. And it's something that I can keep closed if I'd like to just have them personal, or I can open them up and share them if I feel like it. And that would be a really great way to create sacred space in your home, or in your apartment in a small space, or even if you're traveling, you could carry it with you and put it out on the tabletop next to you. So that's one way you can, you know, create sacred space in a very small area.
I have to say, too, that I really enjoyed your mentioning the house deity, the Lithuanian house deity, Aspalini, who ruled the corner of the house behind the door. I thought that was quite interesting and in a great way, especially for apartment dwellers, to adopt a deity for their small spaces.
Great, and thanks for mentioning that. I think each person would have fun looking into their own ethnic heritage and finding out what were some of the household deities that might have been used by their ancestors and incorporate those. I think that would be great fun.
And speaking of any dwelling, but I would imagine especially apartment dwelling, how to clear negative energy from a space? You enumerate some rituals that are pretty powerful and also easy for people to use, it seems.
Right. I do talk about a specific ritual in the book, but there's many rituals that you could come up with on your own and ways of doing that. One thing that I do on a weekly basis is when I'm cleaning my house, I like to clean one room at a time, move the negative energy out of that room. And negative energy, maybe negative is not the best word, but energy that gets stagnant, that collects in corners of the house. And not always is it seen, but we know it's there. Just like in our cities where we have a lot of pollution, that seems to build up in areas where it can't move, the air is not free-flowing. So it's important in our homes to move that energy, to move the stagnant air, and we can do that when we clean our homes. So a good ceremony that you could use around that is after you've cleaned a room, you've vacuumed or dusted, and maybe you've even opened the windows and let the air come through if it's warm. And then you can light a candle, bless the room, give the room your appreciation for being there for you. And if you would like, or you burn incense, you could also burn a little incense, spritz the air with aromatic water, and then move on to the next room. And it's really a very simple ceremony, but it's quite profound how that room feels once that's done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably feel pretty intimidated. They'd want to hire somebody, you know, to come in and clean the energy of their house. But I'm wondering how you feel about it really empowering a person to clean their own space, you know, to really challenge that and do these kind of sacred rituals. And
I would highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think if there's anything that I really speak to in my book, it is trying to empower the reader to be not only their own decorator, but their own creator of sacred space.
Right.
So important. And not to give that power to someone else. You own it. It's within you to do that. And you might need a few guidelines or have questions, and that's how you can, you know, bring in the advice of someone else, but certainly not to adopt what they have to say as the ultimate way that your home should appear.
Right, it is your space after all. And I'd like to remind listeners that we're speaking today on Alternative Currents with Laureen Morrison-Meyer, author of Sacred Home, Creating Shelter for Your Soul, and published by Llewellyn Books. You talk about creating with the four elements and a fifth element, which I'd like to address separately, which is quintessence. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach creating with the elements and what they, each of them, really means to you?
Yes, I could, and I've done this a little bit differently than I found anywhere else. When I was teaching my students, I would find that they wanted some way to remember how to put things together in space that really worked well together. And so I started out with this idea of four various types of design styles. And, you know, working with this over a number of years, I came up with this archetypal design style that incorporates the four elements. And it really has ancient roots. So it's not anything that I've created, but I've maybe brought it into the interior design field. And that is that air, water, fire, and earth represent four basic design styles, as well as we know Jungian temperaments and personality types. But in the design styles, air would represent masculine formal design. Water is feminine formal. Earth is feminine informal. And fire is masculine informal. And each of these archetypes is a representation of a lot of information. But just by kind of knowing the archetype and the various materials and elements that it represents, a person is able to kind of envision what might work well together and what might be contrasting. So I brought that into the book. And then, as you mentioned, the fifth element, which the Greeks called quintessence, which Quinta is five, and essence is the essential elements. So the fifth essential element is spirit, or chi, or life force, prana. And bringing that into your home, I have quite a few suggestions for doing that, but how important that is to bring life force, or chi, into our homes.
Yeah, I agree. I love the way that you talk about animals, because we had a couple of dogs, and our last dog died last fall. And we have a pretty vital home. I mean, it's definitely an expression of who we are. And yet, it was so odd when that dog died. We just ended up getting another dog a couple of months later because it just seemed too weird walking into the house. Albeit it's full of plants and, you know, life of its own. But that missing element to us, that missing piece of quintessence was definitely the dog. So I found it interesting that you talked about how important pets were in bringing that spirit in there.
Yes, for me it's essential, and I know that there's a lot of my clients and a lot of readers that may not be able to have pets for some reason or another. At one book signing, someone asked me if a pet rock was considered a pet. And I said, well, I'd like to see you bring something with higher vibrational energy into So if you can't have pets for one reason or another, one thing that you could do is to try and open your windows up to the outside, and perhaps you have birds, and you know that might be coaxed into your yard with bird feeders, or you might even be able to just bring in plants and flowers, things of that nature that bring a living element into your home. And those higher vibrational elements really start waking a home up and making it feel alive, rather than everything just being a representation, like pictures of things. So trying to bring the life force in with pets is ideal, but if not, plants. And, you know, in certain situations where you can't incorporate anything living, then a picture of something that's a beautiful scene that might substitute, but hopefully only for a short while.
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody, but it just for us, it just seemed like there was definitely a presence that was missing. And so I think it's important to pay attention and tune into those things, regardless of how they go through, you know, for each individual. I mean,
exactly.
For someone else, yeah, a potted plant or cut flowers. I mean, cut flowers always make me feel just amazing when I bring them into the house, especially
exactly.
In the winter when we can't have them right outside the window. So,
and as you know, when you look through design magazines, you see rooms, and so many times they've brought a pet into the room for the photograph, and how much that adds to the space.
Well, it's funny. You triggered something else from my reading in your book, and that was cutting things out of magazines that we like. You know, if people have no idea about what they want for their design plan for their house or to change the energy in the house, if they just feel completely lost, I really like your idea of saying, you know, just go through magazines and cut out ideas. If you like this or if you like that, and then you've at least got themes to work with. I mean, I tend to read a lot, and I tend to look at a lot of magazines, and I love home design kind of magazines. It's just a hobby of mine, if nothing else. And I'll see these great ideas, and I'll think, oh, I'll remember that. And I don't tend to do it. So I like the idea of actually tearing it out and putting it in a folder somewhere. And then you go back to it, and you haven't got a stack of magazines to go through again. So
yes, yeah, because how quickly you can lose that one picture that was exactly what you wanted to do in parts of your home. And I really think that the more you start collecting these pictures, the more you're creating your intention as well. So there's also this other underlying thing that by envisioning what you would like, you start creating it.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to start, you know, your own scrapbook, your own notebook with things that you love.
I also like when under your chapter of creating with the four elements, when you talk about air representing those thoughts and intentions, and what happens when there's too much overbalance, let's say, of the air element, where you're kind of stuck in thoughts and intentions, but you haven't got emotions to move it or fire to make it happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, just a little brief overview of that with the creating with the elements, air being thought and our ideas is that place where we start all creation with an idea. And like you mentioned, some people get stuck there, and that's the, you know, the brilliant people that have so many ideas going around in their head, but they need something else to get that implemented in reality. And the water element then can represent dream time or that incubation that where the thoughts start to magnify. Earth, then, is a representation of the actual four senses, you know. So you're really kind of getting out and doing the leg work at that stage. And that might, if we're talking about creating a beautiful space in your home, you might actually be out shopping and looking for things and narrowing down possibilities. And then the fire element is that creativity and the passion that when it all comes together and it starts to manifest itself in your dreams, in your real life, and it becomes a reality.
Right. I think it's a good time to take a break. Listeners, we are speaking on alternative currents today with Laureen Morrison-Meyer, author of Sacred Home, Creating Shelter for Your Soul, published by Llewellyn. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
is where the heart is, and my heart is anywhere you are, anywhere you are, is home. I don't need a mansion on a hill that overlooks the sea. Anywhere you with me is home. Maybe I'm a rolling stone who won't amount to much, but everything that I hold dear is close enough to touch. For home is where the heart is, and my heart is anywhere you are, anywhere you are, is home, home, home.
Good old Elvis. I dedicate that to my little Elvis girl, Amanda. Welcome back. Alternative Currents, Bella Johnson and Dee Groom. And we're speaking today with Laureen Morrison Meyer, author of Sacred Home, Creating Shelter for Your Soul. You're listening to Alternative Currents on WERU FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor, and live streaming on the web at weru.org.
I just wanted to mention how much I appreciated your speaking about the importance of accommodating all the people in the home, that the design needs to include everybody, that it's everybody's sacred space.
Absolutely. I mentioned in the book about a client that I had at one time who was decorating her home, and she asked me what I would do for her daughter's room, and I asked her what her daughter had envisioned, and she said, oh, just something, you know, typically teenage, just ghastly. And so I gave her the best advice I could, and that was, you know, let your daughter do what she'd like to do in her room and just close the door when you walk by. And I think that advice is sometimes hard for us to have areas of our home that maybe don't appeal to us, but it's very important that everyone has a space in that home that they feel is reflective of who they are.
I have a space for my cat that actually is her space, and she has made her own as well. So,
oh, for your cat, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, I, in 25 years as an interior designer, some of my background as a psychologist came into play, because I had so many times a husband and wife often coming from very different vantage points of what they wanted in the home. And there's wonderful ways to compromise that, and to without compromising it, but ways of coming together and finding things that they love together, and then those things that they feel strongly about that the other one may not want in their space. We find places to put that, and to have that as a personalized area for each individual.
Laureen, when you talk about the elements, you also talk in your writings about bringing in missing elements. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, how does one determine, other than someone like me who feels when things are out of balance, how does one determine that they're out of balance with those elements?
That's a very good question. Let me give you an example of a home that might feel out of balance. For instance, a home that is high-tech, and all the surfaces are extremely clean, not only clean lined, but maybe even reflective materials. And it can start to appear very cold. Very contemporary spaces, minimalist type of spaces, might appear cold. And if someone is in a space and they have that feeling that there's not much warmth, they might look around and see, well, maybe there's too much air. And this kind of design style is what I call an airspace. You know, it's very intellectual, and it appeals to the air type of personality. But you might find that what you need to do is add a little bit of fire to that, or a little bit of water, and that might even be something that you can bring in, like a fireplace or candles. Or in the case of water, it might be something that is a color that is a little bit more soothing, so it's not all just these sharp, strong contrasts. It really takes actually a lot of explanation in a short amount of time here, but what each person could do is find out, is there something in their space that feels that it's imbalanced, that it's either too hot, too much fire, maybe it's too cluttered, and that I would call too earthy. And in a water space, it might even be too dreamy. You know, it feels like a space where it could get a little bit cold and aloof. And that might need a little warming up. So I think, Bella, it could be that the intuitive part of you really needs to get engaged here to find out, is there something missing and what that might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, if people feel stuck in life, it often helps to move things around in the home. When you were talking about a client of yours, I believe, that had a collection of statues in the house, and it didn't feel, you know, it felt too cold and sterile in a way, so one of the statues was moved to an altar position where this became this little goddess or this little deity of the house. That was, I think, a perfect example of that. Often we have what we need right there, but it's a matter of just finding the place it wants to be. Almost like with plants, I've discovered, I used to think I was horrible at raising indoor plants, and now they're just like, they're too big for anything. They're doing really well. But it's like learning what plant wants to be where. You know?
Exactly.
Not
and,
just.
And the situation that you were mentioning was a client whose husband was an art collector, and he had a lot of sculpture in the home. And they just sat on their little pedestals around the home. But they didn't feel like they were a part of the home as much as they could, or really adding to it like they could. And so she would move this one beautiful sculpture around from place to place. And I said, you know, I bet if we took it off its pedestal and we put it on a shelf in the kitchen where it would just act as this little kitchen goddess. She absolutely loves this piece now, and it's just beautiful sitting in the kitchen on a shelf, rather than being as formal as it was on a pedestal in the living room. So, yeah, take a look around, see what you already own and how you might just move that and give it new energy and new life. And like you say, with your plants, they have a place where they're going to feel most at home. Just try it out in different spots till you find where it really seems to be enjoying it and growing vitally in that particular space.
Yeah, despite what the instructions say that came with the plant,
yeah.
I might add.
You had mentioned something about clutter, and I think this is an area that kind of catches people, or people end up maybe most frustrated with when they're trying to deal with their own interior space.
What to do with the clutter, or how to manage the clutter,
how to think of the clutter, or
clutter really has a lot to do with obstacles, especially if we're stepping around things in our home. So one bit of advice that I like to give is to create a pathway through your home of at least 3 feet for your major walkways, where you're not having to step around things. And, you know, certainly some of us have smaller spaces where we say, gee, I don't have 3 feet, but this walkway that is where you go from your major rooms in the house, if that's free of clutter, it's also symbolic of clearing clutter out of our lives and freeing up obstacles that keep us from really getting where we want to go. So it's more than just physical. It's on a psychological and symbolic level as well. And what to do with the clutter? You know, I think recycling is, is great. And so we can probably eliminate a lot of things that we're not using, and someone else would be just thrilled to have them. So I really like to go through things every so often and donate them, recycle them in some way so someone else can use what you know, I have an overabundance of and becomes my clutter, might become something vital for them.
Yeah, it seems so strange that all these storage shed things popping up everywhere, you know, it's how much stuff does anybody really need? I mean, I understand being in transition, but when what you have inside begins to flow to the outside and then you don't have room and you have to rent a storage shed I think feng shui has good things to say about that as far as just eliminating anything that is not deeply meaningful to you.
Exactly. Yes. And I think sometimes we're afraid that, oh, I'm going to need that. As soon as I get rid of it, I'm going to need that. But letting go is a way of kind of freeing up things to come to you as well.
Right. Well, you talk about, too, kind of, and I wonder, you know, about form following function or function following form in this case, when you get stuck in life, how that reflexor can help to change by changing your environment.
Oh, so important. Everything that is in our environment is giving us signals all day long. And what we start to think about all day is who we become. So for me, it just makes good sense to make sure that what we put in our built environment, in our home, are things that are giving us positive input. So positive symbols, colors that we love, objects that when we look at them, we feel good. And it doesn't have to be elaborate. They can be very inexpensive things, but they need to appeal to us on a deep psychological level. And that's that part, too, about finding out who we are and what we love. And we'll start drawing those things into our space. When we know from a deep level what it is that makes our hearts sing, it will come to us. We'll find it. And then surrounding ourselves with that will remind us of joy and create a space in our home, or create our home to be a place that really nurtures us.
I think there's issues, too, with our society being such a society of transience. I mean, we move around so much more than, I don't know your age, I'm 51, my parents' generation, they really did not move around quite so much. And certainly their parents' generation tended to stay put. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if sometimes we say, well, it kind of feeds back into Dee's comment on living in an apartment in the city, that this isn't really our space. This isn't our home. We'll have our home in this next place or this mm-hmm. other place. And mm-hmm. how important do you feel it is? I mean, I feel it's important to really nest in and settle in wherever I am, just so that I do create that nurturing space where I can recharge.
Absolutely. And if whatever space you're in, give thanks for that space and be, as you say, bring things that nurture you into that space with you. Don't wait until someday I'm really going to be able to have what I want. No, have it now. Have it now with no matter what it is. I mean, here our ancestors lived in caves, and they made some of the most incredible art in the world on these walls. So it doesn't matter how small or how temporary your space might be. You can create beauty within that space that's meaningful.
I think I was really struck in the same line. You had said that without spirit in our homes, when nothing is sacred, nothing seems to support us, we feel we must do everything alone and against all odds. And I think this, I hadn't realized before I read this book, how much being in the space affects you, and that if when you think in that, in those terms, that you do feel supported. This is spirit with you. And I think that, for me, I think that was the biggest take-home point.
Right. I have various things in my home that remind me of my higher power. And certainly that differs with each person. But whatever that is, to surround yourself with that. And even to, I mean, we're not worshiping these things, but they're reminding us of just what you said, we're not in this alone. You know, we have spirit guides and angels and we know that we're guided. You know, we can't always see this, but we can feel it. And when you incorporate those objects into your home that remind you of your higher power, your home is really a sacred space. I mean, it truly becomes more of a sacred space, and it feels as it would if you were to travel to some beautiful cathedral in Europe or to sit on a vortex in Sedona, Arizona. You know, you can create that in your own home with surrounding yourself with the divine.
Well, too, I think it's easy to forget that things are made up of elements of the earth, elemental qualities of the earth. I mean, even plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important to remember that everything has a source. It's kind of like saying a blessing over a meal, forgetting that that food was grown in the earth, forgetting that that was, you know, all the process that it went through to get conveyed to your table.
Right, right. And then that, on even a more elemental level, we're interchanging our molecules and atoms with everything in our home all the time. We're intermingling. So we are a part of it. It's all a living entity. And some looks like it's solid, but it's just vibrating at a lower frequency. So when we truly understand that the space between each atom in what looks like a solid sofa is quite far apart, and that, you know, we're intermingling with that, our home really is alive, and, you know, we need to treat these spaces with respect and with love. And I think what we'll find is that our homes will repay us many times over.
Right. Yeah, you were kind of talking about what you see on the sofa, and it triggered you talking about color and actually how we don't see colored objects. Quoting from you, but rather the rods and cones on the retina of your eyes respond to electromagnetic waves of energy. The visible portion is the color spectrum of light. Color is the way you see light reflected by an object. Mm-hmm. You respond to colors physically, emotionally, psychologically, and culturally.
Yeah, so how important is that, you know, when you're deciding what color you might choose for a wall? On another vein, I have two sons that have been calling me recently about colors they're picking out for their home, and my father was colorblind, and I'm afraid that I've passed that gene on to these two.
Oh, no.
Because what I'm telling them, oh, there's a great light green that you should go get, and they'll go come back and say, that's brown. So we really are seeing these things differently. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a name for something, but how each person perceives is really their own perception, their own way of seeing what we have named a certain name. So for one son, he needed a deeper, stronger color to be able to see the green in it rather than this more muted color that I could see lots of green in. So it really is physical and psychological, too. Green might be something that really turns someone off, might remind them of insects or something that they're not, they don't want to surround themselves with. But for me, green is the color of nature and of growing things. So I think it's a wonderful color to bring in your home in various ways.
Right. Well, there's another spiritual lesson to that as well, certainly a life lesson that everyone's perceptions are different, aren't they?
And exactly.
It's so easy to forget that because we see things a certain way, and that's part of what Dee was bringing up earlier about everyone having their own sense of honor in that space that has to live there.
Yes, and I feel it's so important that you don't give that off to another authority, someone that comes in and tells you that they have the answer for you. And sometimes that happens because we want our homes to be beautiful, but if we remember that what we really, really need is for our home to be a reflection of who we are, then we can get guidance, but we're the ultimate authority in what we want in our home.
I think that, though, that speaks to some of the whole, all these questions, too, though, is for people who don't have any idea of how they want to decorate their home or make it more personal, how do they get help? I mean, how will someone outside help them? How do they know they're not taking on too much of the designer's ideas or perspective and not their own?
I think it's a really good idea for each person before they work with the designer to do their homework and make their own notebook and their own collection of things that they love, and to really communicate that with the designer if they're going to work with one. This is who I am, and this is what I love, and this is what I would like to have in my home. And if someone then says, well, you know, that's tacky, or that's not what we're doing nowadays, then maybe find someone else. And there will be someone there that can give you guidance. So you take your ideas, and what I like to do with my clients is to take their ideas and help them incorporate them in a way that is beautiful, that flows and has, you know, incorporates design principles that they'll love living with for a long time, you know, being able to have a certain amount of harmony in the space because of what we've done. But it's their ideas, their colors, the fabrics they love, etc.
I like how you give the archetypal styles according to the tarot, the major arcana tarot cards. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, and a little bit earlier I started to mention that, and it's a deep topic. It's one that's, you know, that needs some reading and explanation behind it.
Sure.
But the tarot, what I did was I assigned an archetype to each of these elements. And in doing so, that archetype can create a whole picture in your mind of not only what that archetype represents, but maybe their surroundings as well. For instance, the archetype for air would be the King of Swords. That would be one archetype. I listed several in the book. But in the tarot, it might be the King of Swords. And that particular archetype, then, is very regal, very royal. A little cold, you know, certainly a warrior. And that represents this design style that's very formal and masculine and powerful. And the archetype of water, in the tarot I used the Queen of Cups. And in that, you're seeing this archetype that really represents a very formal feminine design style. And certainly as a queen, we see things that are more formal and more as feminine, formal, and Queen of Cups, we can see a whole design style that might be around that such as a temple, alabaster, things of that nature, and glistening surfaces.
Well, it's nice. You do certainly not have to convey everything in the book to our listeners, and I appreciate you giving the information that you are giving. But you really do illustrate beautifully the archetypal design styles. You know, you've got the tarot card or the suit or the zodiacal signs that relates to, the temperament and personality style, the design element, colors, patterns, textures, fabrics, building materials that can be incorporated in furnishing. So really there's a lot for the reader to examine with each of those, and I didn't mean to kind of put you on the spot.
That's all right.
Have you been trying to
make it succinct and get
yes.
it down
oh,
into
that's
a few
okay.
words
yeah.
Was a little overwhelming, but yes,
yeah.
There's a lot of information in the book about how to find what design style speaks to you personally, and how to create that style,
and also how to balance it. I think that's what I really found different from feng shui books, for example, that I've read. It tends to go to a certain, even though there's a certain amount of freedom, there's still a certain amount of rigidity. And I think this is much more flowing in a sense, allows things to be a lot more personal, and helps us find that balance. I mean, I really believe if you can find balance in your personal space, you can find balance in your life. It makes a big difference. I know sometimes I'll just kind of sit and open myself up to my space, and what comes in to me in those times is very nurturing, and I don't feel that way in some homes and some spaces, and I think the occupants of those spaces don't necessarily feel at home in them. Often I think they just don't know what to do. You know, they saw a design style in a book or at Home Depot and they copied that and it didn't really seem to work for them. So I think this book, Sacred Home, again, the book is Sacred Home, Creating Shelter for Your Soul, published by Llewellyn, really gives us things that in a pretty, I don't know, it's a pretty succinct manner that we don't find very often, helping us to feed our souls through our sacred space. Lorene, we have about 5 minutes. I'd like to give you that opportunity if you'd like to cover any points that you would like to, and if none, we'll continue.
One thing that I wanted to point out to people, and this would be just three different ways that you could summarize what was in Sacred Home, three ways of creating sacred space in your home. And one of those is personalizing our homes. And that involves surrounding ourselves with things we truly love, with our hobbies, our interests, and passions. Might be that we're a book reader, and we can surround ourselves with great books or good music. The colors and textures and artwork should reflect our own personal taste. We've certainly talked about that today, but that's personalizing our space and how important that is to make it space that truly reflects who we are. And then vitalizing or energizing our space. That's about bringing in this prana or life force, the quintessential elements. Waking up our dead, lifeless space by adding vitality. And we talked about that with plants and flowers and pets, adding things that have a higher vibrational energy. And the third thing that really kind of summarizes some of the things in the book is to sanctify our homes. Dedicate your home. Create a ritual stating your intentions for your home. And then perform rituals often. Light candles, spray what I call holy water in the air, setting out bowls of fruit or a vase of flowers, or moving stagnant energy, just creating rituals. And then use sacred symbols and artifacts as subtle reminders of the abundance and the supportive nature of the universe, and also to ask spirit to dwell with you in your home, however you might define that. So those three things, personalizing, vitalizing, and sanctifying, are three ways of really creating sacred space in your home.
I also like the way you mentioned offerings, because I don't think, you know, our culture, we've gotten pretty far away from a lot of that stuff. But I found it interesting that you talked about offerings, and even if you didn't have the ability to do that, to even toast something, for example, over the burner of a stove. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, that was an ancient custom, and Greek and Roman families very often threw a little bit of the food into the fire as an offering. And I think that's a way of thanking the universe for what we have. And certainly when we toast or give a prayer, we do that. But when you do something that is bringing a thought into reality by a ritual, you're actually magnifying your thought. You're creating a stronger connection to your thought. So when you do a little ritual, such as tossing a little bit of the food that you're going to eat, a small portion into the barbecue or into your fireplace or even over a little candle, it's an ancient sacred ritual of saying thank you.
Yeah, I know we always give a little something to the dog. You know, people say, well, don't feed your pets from the table, but he's not a beggar at all. And when we're outdoors and we're hiking or whatever, and my partner is the one who started doing this, is just if we're eating trail mix or something, he leaves a little bit on a rock, like for the squirrels or whoever comes along, you know. So it is interesting how things just kind of come back in when they're meant to, I guess. But we always
that sharing with the universe what you have and
yeah.
Opening up to that.
Yeah, we don't think about, oh, we're going to give an offering to the dog, but we just always give him a little bit of what we're eating, not a ton of it, but, you know, it just seems right to do it.
They would oftentimes pour a little of the wine into a glass that was for their sacred house spirit, and that would be, you know, the first glass that was poured and offered to their house deity.
Well, there certainly are other cultures that still do this. I had a professor in college who spent some time in Bali, and she said that they still do this to this day, you know, that people will prepare a meal, this beautiful meal, and the first plate of that goes outside to, as an offering to the deity, mm-hmm. and that you're walking mm-hmm. along and you see these, you know, beautiful plates of food sitting outside people's homes. It's like, whoa, maybe that's for me.
Yeah. Wonderful symbolic gestures, yes. Mm-hmm. And how many more we can incorporate and think of and bring into our home to really enliven it and bring tradition into our home space.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Laureen, for being our guest today. And hopefully people can take a look if they would like more of this wonderful impetus to cleaning out, doing our spring cleaning and bringing in some fresh energy. Sacred Home, Creating Shelter for Your Soul, Laureen Morrison-Meyer, published by Llewellyn. And as always, you can research more about authors that I've interviewed by tapping into either WERU's website and looking at upcoming shows, or you're welcome to, and that's WERU.org, or you're welcome to look at my website, bellajohnson.com. Give me an email and I will put you in touch with links to authors of the past. That is bellajohnson.com, Bella's with one L. Thank you for listening today.
I knew this place, I knew it well. Every sound and every smell. And every time I walked, I fell for the first 2 years or so. And there across the grassy yard, I, a young boy running hard, brown and bruised and battle-scarred and lost in sweet illusion. From my window, I can see the fingers of an ancient tree. Reaching out, it calls to me to climb its surly branches. But all my climbing days are gone, and these tired legs I'm standing on would scarcely dare to leave the spot upon which they are standing. And I remember every word from every voice I ever heard, and every frog and every bird. Yes, this is where it starts. My brother's laugh, the sighing wind, this is where my life begins. And this is where I learn to use my hands and hear my heart.